Well, Mr. Man who keeps track of how many days he drinks in a year so it doesn't die, what do you think about this? From our dusty cellars, live from the newsroom, and Greta Thunberg in embarrassing climb down as NASA scientists confirm the discovery of elusive Planet B. It's the final countdown.
A cheeky Planet B hiding from us all these years.
All these years. It was right there. Just look up.
Just look right up there. There's shuttles going there daily. We are also joined by our two intrepid news anchors, Gavin Carberry, joining us to explain new survey data indicate that people who lament the loss of grittiness in an area correlates 1-to-1 with people who, if that grit came back, would never go there. Gavin, here you are live from Stony Batter. What have you got to say for us?
I'm glad Stony Batter still has a little bit of the grittiness after Smithfield lost it all.
We're coming for you next, Fibsborough.
Fibsborough's gone, man. You're going to have to go to Cabra.
Fibsborough's long gone. Yeah.
Cabra's gone too. Cabra's gone.
Cabra's on the way out. I think Cabra's got like 6 or 8 gaffs left.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. But in reality, they're actually like they don't even have a Dublin number. They just want to have a Dublin number. They're aspirational. There are disappearing areas like Drimna is now 4 houses because if you can get away with Terran Ure, you're getting away with that. If you can say
it's been eaten by Crumlin as well.
If you can get away with Dublin 6 West
that's Temple Oak, yeah, because they would have had to have been Dublin 26 or something, and they were like,
lie to me.
There is now no Kimmage Road East because it has been entirely encompassed by Terran Ure Road West, so it goes straight to Kimmage Road West after the KCR.
That's brilliant.
Dublin snobbery is hilarious. Also, joining us on the news broadcast this evening, we speak to Jack Toner, who is with a Donegal woman who's starting to suspect that her husband's enthusiasm for traveling to Dublin for the Mica protests grows exponentially when she asks him to do any minor chore around the house. Jack, you're speaking to Imelda there in Gwydor.
The grass remains thoroughly uncut, but there's a lot of Weetabix jokes on placards.
Yeah. I'm taking that their husband is actually a dub who deliberately moved into one of the Mica-infected houses for a bargain and for a handy excuse to get away from the missus for a few days. Am I right?
The case with 100%
who can blame
of Mica
them? Am I right?
As is true of all of them.
Yeah,
I believe is true of all of them.
It's a total inside job from lazy husbands.
It should be obvious by the ridiculous accent they all have. Like, there's no way the people from Donegal actually sound like that, you know? Hockey, hurdy-gurdy, shirly-burly, here's the Weetabixie, hurdy-gurdy.
Where'd Malice go?
I know, it's a micro-protester right here in the room. I think that's the stand we need to take as Posh Trinity boys, which is to punch down on the unfortunate people whose houses are crumbling.
You're right, Malice. I've become a bit tired of punching up. I mean, they talk about how you should do it, but they never talk about how tiring it is.
Yeah.
Yes, and how those you try to do it to have the resources to ruin you.
Yeah. I mean, it's the holidays. We deserve a break. You know, a little downhill punch-a-thon.
2 weeks of punching down.
Exactly. That's my New Year's resolution.
And like, I will grant you that someone whose house is literally crumbling, if we're making fun of that specific person, there's almost no argument that would be punching down. But if you try to tell me that like a whole demographic of people, like for example, making fun of women, that'd be punching down. It's Mary McAleese. She's doing fine. You know? Not that I'm fighting for my right to make fun of women. I'm just simply...
Just there are a lot of women for whom it would very much be punching up.
It would very much be punching up, exactly.
And Manus has been sitting there, like, squirreling away, working on hours and hours of Mary McAleese material that he just can't use.
I really thought she was going to go the other way after her presidency. I thought she was going to become the national joke, but it did not happen. Fingers crossed for Michael D. Have any ex-presidents got that treatment? They're all kind of held in esteem, aren't they?
They're all held in esteem, yeah. And any beyond Mary Robinson, I don't really, like, remember their presidency or the time afterwards, and we don't really talk about them, you know, other than in a historical context anymore.
Yeah, the modern era of presidents is a short list.
I mean, Patrick Hillary was alive for years while we were alive. But yeah, you never heard from him.
They're not given much opportunity to disgrace themselves, in fairness. Like, it's
again, we've been waiting for Birdie 2024 or whatever that's going to be.
Like, I cannot wait.
It's going to be such good crack.
Like, if nothing else, it does almost guarantee that he'll never come back to any other form of public life. And we'll know where he is at all times, as opposed to when we always sort of knew
that we were pagans.
Like a surreptitious, like, putting of Bertie in the White House. The White House, because fuck it.
Manus has been on Facebook again.
Okay, I'm Manus Cronin. Joining us this week, as always, I've already said, I just sort of changed the way the intro. Yeah. I was trying to write Weekend Update jokes, and like, those three are definitely bad Weekend Update jokes.
But the format was pretty much there. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, you're watching Norm, who was the only one who was ever any good at it. I certainly don't remember Chevy Chase doing it. I'm told he was good at it, but then you watch it and it's Chevy Chase. You can't get over that. So yeah, it's hard to tell objectively. But all the things you watch are like the highlight reels. Like, there's no appetite for just going back and regularly watching. I bet he wrote some crappy ones.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you're putting on a show every week. There's going to be some duds.
That's so true of Saturday Night Live. Like, every time I think that there was a golden era of it, you realize it's like, no, I've been watching like highlights of what that was. And yeah, there's like hours of good stuff, but they were on every week. It's like mostly duds. Yeah. You ever go back and try and watch any of it?
It's a 90 minute show, I think.
I
remember it being super long, because you can go and watch, they're quite good at protecting their archive now, but they used to be all on like YouTube and stuff, and you could watch full episodes. I'm like, Jesus.
I would watch the YouTube with the stuff they put up on YouTube most weeks now. I got into it about a year ago, and I was like, you know what, is it good? Occasionally. And it's worth the dice roll most of the time.
Yeah, they got into putting all their stuff, I feel like a lot of people got into putting all their stuff on YouTube a bit late. Like, they tried to control it as much as possible, be like, oh, you can only get like shitty quality ones or whatever. But now, yeah, they stick up every single sketch, and like, yeah, it just makes way more sense to that. I feel like the Premiership and other sports leagues figured that out as well. It's like, yeah, just stick up a 2-minute highlight reel on YouTube. It's not going to affect the people who
want to watch
the whole match.
Yeah.
No, and as soon as it started, the Premier League were really late. That was really so late. Hard to get fucking highlights if you didn't happen to.
And then they figured out if you make it an 8-minute highlight reel, you can do mid-video ads.
Yeah, which is good. Like, as opposed to all the millions of ads that exist all over the pitch while you're watching it. Like, you ever sit there and someone will go, isn't it great that they don't have ads during the game? It's like, look at the screen. Look at it now.
Actually, Manus, as someone who does occasionally who like watches the NFL, trying to watch any game live is a fucking nightmare.
Oh, sir, that's like Red Zone is the way to watch the NFL.
It's the only way to watch it. But also, you're kind of watching 8 games at once, which is almost too much. Like, watching it like a few hours later, once like on that, if you have Game Pass, they'll like cut all the ads out for you. That's the real way to watch it. Wait until you kind of hear what game was good. Watch one game a week in detail. But no ads.
How long games without ads?
Yeah. It's about 3.5 hours with ads, and it's about 2:15 without.
I actually thought there would have been, as bad as that is, if you'd have told me it was worse, it feels worse when you're watching it live. Like, you know,
it feels
worse. I guess because so many people only watch the Super Bowl as well, and then they've got this halftime that takes 4 years as well, and it's late at night.
And the ads are kind of worth watching, because like some of the ads are fucking like live, and they're all fucking explosive and shit. Like, the ads are kind of a part of the Super Bowl at this point. But then you're watching the same fucking ad for GMC trucks 18 weeks in a row, 4 times an hour. It's just, oh, like, you realize why, like, America is such a slogan heavy country. The opportunities to just absolutely batter content into people is mind blowing.
It's true. And sausages.
Yeah. Bathory sausages as well.
On the agenda this week, we have who is the wrestler that lost the most when kayfabe died? I'm going to say Strangler Lewis, because we all figured out it was his Mickey he was strangling.
Lewis was the name of his Mickey.
No, honest, I think the original purpose of that agenda item was which wrestler got like lost in their kayfabe, like became the character.
Oh, sorry. Too. Yeah, that's a much better question than the one I tried to answer. We'll come back to it. Also, this may be a very brief one, but remember when Trinity either accidentally or deliberately gave us all unlimited cloud storage forever?
Yes.
Me and my 1.2 terabytes of footage on my drive agree with that.
Yeah, I suppose my question is, can this be used for evil? And can we think of any ways that it might be?
Please look at Jack's 1.2 terabytes of video footage.
Yeah. For evil.
Yeah, it's just me. It's also, sorry, it's all footage of me punching cats.
You better hope that's all it is.
Yes, me destroying.
You better not be on there punching down.
No, they're really tall cats.
Okay, then. That's fine.
Okay, wait. I have a beer I'm drinking.
Yeah, before we do that, Gavin has a beer.
I did a Craft Central order as soon as I got into isolation, and it came a little bit too late. But listen, hey. They're only human. I ordered it on Friday evening and it came on Monday. This is Other Half and Burial, The Ballad of Young Grays. It's an Imperial India Pale Ale. It is 8%. And it's all right. I've never had any Burial. I've never had any Other Half, I don't think. Put the two together and it's a cloudy, pretty juicy Imperial Pale Ale. I quite like it. It's got a really nice mouthfeel, good body, and legs that go all the way up, if you know what I mean.
They got to go all the way up. Can I ask you, and potentially anyone who might be listening, has Imperial, that just means whatever now, right? That's
it just means strong as shit.
Yeah,
but like 8% isn't strong as shit. Sorry,
I'm thinking 10 it should be, right? I mean,
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I think Imperial does mean nothing, anything, and therefore nothing at the moment. It's kind of like double dry hopped. It's kind of like what else is it? What are the other big ones? Session is getting that way.
Session, yeah. I mean, it means nothing. Like, you know, and the thing is, they actually mostly, when you hear what they're supposed to mean, you're like, oh yeah, there should be a category for that, and that would really help in describing what's in the thing. But like, you know, what was the
what are you guys drinking?
I'm having a fizzy Guinness at the moment, and I have also a Stiegel Gold Brown here with me, which I can't remember if I've had before or not, but it was in the fridge, and so I'll be having it. There it is. Dave Guilfoyle sent us a picture of a Status Quo tribute band poster that he seems to have on his wall from when the Status Quo tribute played in The Trap in Clara, and the three lads look pretty much what you'd imagine three lads who decided to start a Status Quo tribute band would look like.
Yeah. He sent that photo to me directly. And the only thing I had to say was that those three men should be ashamed of themselves.
I feel very left out, first of all, Dave. I did not receive the image.
You don't have the same problem with Status Quo tribute acts that I do have.
It's true.
And I didn't come in quite as hot on the Status Quo. Oh,
Gavin lost a couple of girlfriends to some lad in a Status Quo tribute group. I'll tell you, he
the
didn't like
guy,
it.
Three or four girlfriends.
Wait, was this yesterday? This gig?
No, it can't have been. Well, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Dave does like to take the posters of Status Quo tribute bands down as a man who's also been cooked several times by that particular band. So we don't want anyone to know.
Sorry. And it's probably the same guy. So he's been stealing girlfriends here and up in Dundalk Man, he is rocking all over the world.
Yes, there,
oh.
There is there's something of a status quo bias in your girlfriends and your preferences for people to cook you with. You know?
Yeah, I can imagine the lecture being given now. And as we see, most girlfriends do regress towards the status quo tribute act.
They do. Well, they do whatever you want. Whatever you need. Whatever you say. I mean, that song was entirely written to be on the Argos ad or whatever ad it was on.
Really do. I deep down have a great admiration for bands. I think the Heavy come to mind as a modern version of that, who write music like, this is going to do fucking great on television.
Yeah.
Or whoever wrote, what's Here the Come the Girls. You know, whoever wrote that. Yeah.
Knew what's the Heavy's big song? Fuck, I knew it ages ago.
What makes a good band? I think that's them. I think they have two.
You ever listened in its entirety to 13 Tales from Outer Bohemia or whatever the name of the Dandy Warhol's big album was?
How You Like Me Now, no. That was it.
Oh yeah, How You Like Me Now, yeah.
Great ad music. Sorry, Maris, and What Makes a Good Man. That was both of them, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Cage the Elephant are another big one. For that?
Yeah, No Rest for the Wicked was a good show.
No Rest
for
the Wicked.
Yeah, that was a good game trailer off the back of that.
Yeah.
Remember, Borderlands.
Okay, speaking of game trailers, I feel Woodkid was a good one. He was Iron and Run Boy Run.
Okay.
Who else was I thinking of there? Another person who's great for just trailers or something, but not that good generally. Boring. Anyway, I was saying was boring.
Vanis, you had a point there?
No, you know what? I'm actually wrong about this. I was about to say you can listen to that whole album and all of the songs were on ads. Now, Dandy Warhols have an insane amount of things that were used on ads, but that particular album that I'm thinking of really only had Bohemian Like You and I think Godless was on some ads as well. Bohemian Like You was a monster ad track. Like, that was on an ad.
It was. It was that, everywhere.
Yeah. And it works that way. So they're wrong. And the ultimate one was like Moby when Play came out.
Moby.
The ad guys were just like, all right, this is what we're going to need.
Moby was my top played artist of 2021. I rediscovered Play and I was absolutely loving it. Play.
Wow.
Slaps.
Yeah, every single track on that.
Every single track on Play slaps.
That was Moby that was your number one this year. All right, let's go around the room. Manus, are you still rocking Spotify?
Oh yeah. I think we got to my number one. It wasn't the Eagles. I think I said it was.
Bloodhound Gang. No wait, Bloodhound Gang, we were there number one.
Yeah, I was in a ridiculous category for the most listened to of the Bloodhound Gang. And I probably do like them as much as anyone still likes them in 2021.
Yeah.
Going into 2022.
I like Bloodhound Gang as much as the next guy.
Yeah. You know, more even perhaps. Even Jimmy Pop's mother and Evil Jared's father. And I bet you didn't. And that baby who was their drummer before what was their Hooray for Boobies? That was their big album. They had a baby, basically. He was their drummer. He wasn't a baby, but he was a very small infant, and he was the drummer. And he stopped being the drummer right before Hooray for Boobies. And that would piss you off. You know, all those years of being in Bloodhound Gang, whatever that would entail.
And then the person who's most recently been breastfed just gets dropped before the Boobies album.
Now, wait, when you say was a baby or an infant,
Google, I think his name was Spanky G or something. And he used to be the drummer for Bloodhound Gang. And he was a child. They had a child as their drummer.
Spanky, hold on. Spanky.
I can't remember if it's Spanky G. He had some hilarious name. And he is a full-on, prepubescent teenager.
You might have better look Googling.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Child drummer.
There he is.
Skip-o-potamus.
There is. Have you got pictures of Spanky G there?
Wait, I can't find him. There's no... Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah, Spanky G, yeah.
He looks like the kid who was the drummer in Hanson.
Yeah, he is. He is a white drummer with dreads. A white 12-year-old drummer with dreads.
Yeah.
If your child fits this description, please make your way to the checkout. Yeah, Spanky G.
But most of the pictures you see of him there are of him with... on his own, so like it's pretty obvious, but when you see him with the rest of the band as well, it's like there's their little brother that they
wait,
just
like, but on none of like the album cover. Oh yeah, there he is. Yeah.
Oh no, like if you watch any of the videos as well, like they really try and like he's in them, but like they constantly try and shoot the drums from like with Evil Jared blocking them off or like, you know,
yeah.
That's...
What's he up to now? He's just such...
Sitting on all that bad touch money, man.
No, he's not sitting on any bad touch money. That's my point. He left the band before Hooray for Boobies came out.
Oh, that was after.
Because he had to go to college? Like, what?
He had to go to secondary school.
His mom wouldn't give him a lift to the studios.
His mom said...
All right, not to completely derail this, but I have a Reddit thread. Does anyone have any information on what happened to Spanky G?
This is the Christmas episode people deserve.
It is.
Wait, okay. The trail goes cut. Someone uses the phrase in this Reddit thread about Spanky G, the trail goes cold.
Oh, yeah, well, it would do, wouldn't it? I mean, they did kill him. Everyone in the music industry got one. I was reading an article about Bloodhound Gang. Actually, it wasn't about Bloodhound Gang. It was the two guys from Republic Records had a profile in like Hollywood Insider or something. And it was explaining that Bloodhound Gang like made that record label. Like they were working out of a basement apartment. And then the first minor hit from Bloodhound Gang, which was Fire, Water, Burn from One Fierce Beer Coaster. I mean, not that I know everything about them or anything. Happened, and then that like launched between that and the Hot on the Heels coming out after that of Hooray for Boobies, launched that label basically. So when you're that level of influential in the music industry as the gang are, you do get to murder one small child. No questions
and
asked.
But the caveat is that child has to be in your band, which explains why Spanky G was there.
Explains why he was there in the first place. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, what can you do? Yeah, they had a child as their drummer, and we don't know where he is. There was like a rumor at one point that he'd become like a white supremacist and gone off. I don't think that wasn't based on anything, though. I think a guy just decided that one. You know, when you go, yeah, that'd be a good story, so therefore it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend at the show, Ricky McCormack, I went for lunch with him before he left for London, and he told me all about his Matt Damon rumours that he started.
Oh yeah, early COVID Matt Damon rumours.
COVID Matt Damon rumours. He was like, sitting in his room, he's like, I've got nothing to do. I'm just going to come up with some salacious rumours about what Matt Damon has been up to, and like really kind of tease them into a story. So they're absolutely fantastic. But yeah, that's what happens when like someone just disappears, is like all of this like mysterious stuff around them, and the space has to be filled
with
the most ludicrous, the most outrageous yet plausible thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're much better off having a public meltdown, so at least everybody knows.
Yeah.
That's true. There's no ambiguity, because God knows they might come up with something worse.
Like, I don't want to get into the complicated Wikipedia rabbit hole that got me Googling all the kids who were in any of the Mighty Ducks films. But the point is, some of them had very public, like, some of them are great advertisements for why you shouldn't, you know, let children be actors, basically.
Yeah.
And some of them are fine. Like, they're still working actors to this day. And at least one of them is Emilio Estevez. And But most of them, you just you try to find out about them. They acted for a while as a child, and then like you just find out they're said to be working in the hospitality industry somewhere, or like, you know, it's just there's nothing. The trail goes cold, if you will.
Like a nightclub promoter in what's arguably Los Angeles.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So I think they're the grounds you want to go on if you want to start like rumors. You know, people. You know, the kid in the Mighty Ducks. He was number 20 or whatever,
You know, the Bash Brothers actually did gay porn after the Mighty Ducks.
I mean, right? Yeah. I mean, they did like, it in character. There was a lawsuit. The Mighty Ducks of Anaheim sued them. The studio sued them. Everyone was suing each other back and forth. No one called Sue was involved. It was gay porn after all. That's where you need. Well, look, what kind of rumors was Ricky starting about the day man?
So it, like, I suppose now that you know it's a rumor, it doesn't have the same thing. But it would start with like, so my uncle's mate is a guard, right? And he during COVID, like, you know, he was stationed on the N11 just kind of across the road from RT, like stopping cars, asking where they were going and stuff like that. And he was stopping cars and then like letting some pass when he kind of recognized them and stuff. And there was this like beat up old Mazda that he stopped, and he stopped it, and like something looked suspicious. Like maybe it was like some sort of drug thing. Like for non-COVID reasons, he was like really suspicious. They were like boxes in the back seat, and then like the guy was like really kind of scraggly and just something weird was going on. So we asked him like to step out and open up the boot, and so he could take a look. And he opened up the boot, and there was like weird like chains and fucking handcuffs, and like he estimated like about 100 dildos of like various shapes and sizes. And then, like, he's like, okay, like, nothing illegal going on here, but, like, I better just kind of take note of this guy in case, like, something happens. And he asks him for his license. And he looks at it. And it's Matt fucking Damon. On his way to Dorky. With 100 dildos.
See, I think what people may only just now sort of be remembering is the Damon mania that really took place mostly on the internet.
Yeah, there wasn't much to talk about in early COVID. Like Tiger King had come and gone. We were starved of goss. And that was Ricky's whole theory. He was like, look, no one's out there making goss anymore. All our friends are just sort of locked into whatever situation they happen to be in. When COVID hit, what's new? How could we recreate the magic of that WhatsApp voice note that said someone went on a Tinder date with Bertie Ahern?
The guy who lives three doors down from me is actually a guard, and this is the funny thing about it. He was out on the N11 stopping cars, and he finished his shift, like, so he was no longer actively stopping people, but he did notice coming towards him a car driving slowly but erratically, changing lanes, all that shit. So he kind of waves it down, and the car pulls over, and it's similarly a beat up. It wasn't a Mazda though; it was a Renault Clio, and it's a hatchback. And in the back, what he thought were tennis balls, but actually on closer inspection, it was, he opened the boot, and it was Granny Smith's. And then he comes around to the window, and it's Matt Damon, and he says, yeah, how do you like them apples, you know? I wasted everyone's time.
I just want to waste my time and yours.
Very good.
Yeah, loses none of its impact from being the second joke of that of its type to go in there. Yeah, that works. I think
it's funny mentioning because my friend has enough.
If we weren't the sharp iron that we are from sharpening each other's irons the whole time, and we were just people on an internet forum like Reddit or like Facebook or whatever, that is how this thread would go.
It was just,
I made the same joke again, isn't that good?
First.
Second. Guys, I fear like we're getting derailed, and I like came up with the agenda item seconds before we went live.
Yeah, so you're kind of attached to it.
I got attached to it. I really want to get into it. So we were talking about Hulk Hogan, and the whole Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch dick, Terry Bollea has a 6-inch dick. before the show. And I just wanted to find out, like, Hulk Hogan, obviously, in somewhere in his mind, got confused between who is Hulk Hogan and who is Terry Bollea. And he became kind of a mix of the two, I feel. Is there any wrestler who lost themselves in the kayfabe so much and acted like the character so much that they became the character? I have one, but you guys definitely have more.
I have one that comes to mind. And again, I haven't thought about it for very long, but I also have one that comes to mind.
Is yours Ric Flair?
No.
Although he did certainly. So I'm trying to find... I don't know if he really counts, but like I'm trying to find Manny Fernandez stories because he was like a bigger bullshitter than Hulk Hogan. I think Virgil, in a weird way, late in his life, got really lost.
So what's the question? Let's just clarify the question. Who lost the most when kayfabe died?
No, that's what I thought it was. Who got most lost in their character to where they had no idea? I think the Sheik is the answer, the Iron Sheik.
Iron Sheik is a great answer.
Wait, why the Iron Sheik?
Because, like, I don't know where the work starts and the real Cosero, whatever his name is. I don't know where he begins. Like, if you ever like listen to an interview with the Sheik, he's gone around the bend. Like, Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania, you know, he's fucking like. And I don't know if he's just still working people because he's a lunatic or like, or what?
Or if he's just a lunatic.
Virgil, Ted DiBiase's former like male valet, has sort of lost himself in his character as well. I mean, there's quite a lot of them from that era where they really did have to wear it around all day, every day. You know, like I imagine it's pretty easy for like the Young Bucks to go home at night to their house and like.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to kayfabe their wife. They don't bring the kids to say they're going to Disneyland and bring them to the dentist. You know, I'd say they find it quite easy to do that. Is it? You know, if you're Brutus Beefcake, I mean, you know, is it as easy that you've been buzzing around and you've only been hanging around with other wrestlers and like, you know, the only time you interact
with fans who like want to believe or actually believe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like I think they used to think that everyone believed, whereas like most of it was people like there were always just Jesus, there is still dummies who think it's real. Now, the only people who properly think it's real now are the people who like, you know, they'll actively try and like rush the stage or something, or they'll show up at one of the wrestlers' houses to like There's particularly with the women, there's like some creepy dudes out there.
Fucking
like,
true. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
And it'll like coincide with some storyline where it's the man not treating them right or something. And then he'll be like, I'll rescue her. Yeah, that kind of thing will happen. But for the most part, I think even like it's been knowable since the early part of the 20th century that like matches were fixed, like the newspapers would hint at it and stuff, and like I think people just sort of wanted to believe, but the wrestlers were convinced a lot of the time that they were fooling them.
I think the wrestlers end up their end of the bargain in that they maintained the illusion outwardly, even if they didn't believe that illusion was everyone.
But
pretended
see,
to
I knew you were going to go super meta with this, and that might be true. I actually think the way they talk about the fans then. I think they really thought that they were fooling them, and that the meta thing you're talking about did happen, and that like it ended up. I actually think it ended up making the experience better for the fan when they really, really tried to fool you, because it allowed you to do it more. Like, and similarly, when the promoters and the bookers thought the fans were stupid, you know what? They booked it pretty logically. They booked it pretty basically. And everything sort of made sense because they thought they were fooling them. Whereas now it's like they know. And they do. And they kind of always did. But it's metaphorically true that they didn't know. And that it
here's
was better
where,
that they didn't.
Here's where I was going to go. Where I think there's one guy who instead of getting caught up in the character, maybe like convinced himself it was real. Bret Hart.
Oh, interesting.
Believes in wrestling so much that it is, in fact, real to him.
Brett took it super, super seriously. And that used to be something that was he was made fun of about. And, like, if you listen to him, like, a lot of the stuff he said in interviews over the years, like, there is some, like, he rated himself very highly, clearly, but he was excellent. And, like, that's part of what allowed him to be so good. And also a lot of the people that he didn't like, history has vindicated him for not liking them.
Like who?
Like Ric Flair. Shawn Michaels, you know. Known arseholes of the business, you know. So like stuff like the criticisms that Brett used to get if he takes himself very seriously and he's such a big mark for himself. It's like, yeah, God, I wish that was just all they all were.
You know? Gav, you mentioned Ric Flair earlier, and I think that might actually be the winning answer in that I, even with all we know now, see no distinction between the man and the character.
But like, yeah, is Ric Flair a different thing in that like, what
there is
was
no
Ric
character.
Flair's character originally the high flying limousine riding, woo, you know, or was that just what Rick wanted to be and then like made his character that, you know, I don't know.
Well, yeah, when Rick started, he was a big like Dusty Rhodes shaped guy.
Really,
he
the American
wasn't quite
dream.
As fat, but he was super fucking. He was like 300 pounds, and he wanted to be. I think his idea was that he'd be like Dusty's brother, like Rockin' Ricky Rhodes or something like that. You know, in fact, I think he might have worked as Rockin' Ricky Rhodes earlier on. Yeah, I think there's a lot of what. But that's the point, is if you're trying to get, like, he may have got lost in it as much as it's possible, to the point that, like, I don't think he knows the answer to that question at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the question I'm asking, is, like, is there someone who doesn't know where the character ends and they begin? And if Ric Flair is the answer to that question, fucking more power to him, you know?
And I think as well, the, like, heavy drinking for so long has probably blurred, like, you know, decades of his life. We're trying to, I mean, how do you... Your memory's shit. Like you can remember the broad strokes, but you're trying. You know, you really do lose yourself, sort of, in what that is. He might be the best answer in terms of like. I don't think he even knows. I think on some level, Hulk Hogan kind of
knows.
On some level, because like, he clearly did get lost in a lot of it as well. But there are like instances, the man who Hulk Hogan reveals himself, I can't remember who said this to me recently, but like, the man who Hulk Hogan reveals himself to be every time he thinks the cameras are off, might actually be the only consistent thing about him. And he reveals himself to be an absolute self-interested bullshitter. Like you can listen to him on, I don't know if there's any transcripts or if you can actually hear him talking to Nick when Nick was in jail. Like, sort of plotting out how they're going. He's not really plotting it out, but they're sort of saying the things that they're rationalizing in their head, how the guy who Nick injured in the car crash, like, he's a bad person, right? I mean, really, you know, he's like, yeah, definitely. You know, they're saying, well, when you get out of here, you know, we need to get something lined up for you on TV, like, straight away. All that stuff that you would just never say.
You thought
the camera was running. You know, it's just, and it's bullshit, and he's saying things that aren't true, and he does know that they aren't on some level, because he wouldn't say that if there was a camera running, and he would say different things. But even the consistent thread of who he is a bullshit artist. Like, even if you listen to like the bullshit stories that he tells about his career, and you're like, it'd be one thing when a Virgil or a Manny Fernandez or one of these lower tier guys is bullshitting, you're like, I get it why you're doing that, because your actual life is pretty boring, particularly around all the other wrestlers, because like the really interesting thing about you, they all share, you know, they all have that. But if you're Hulk Hogan, the truth is nuts. It's incredibly interesting, and you end up looking pretty good, you know. You are a fascinating man. Your big successes in your career, but there is something about him that he cannot tell the truth, even when it would suit him better to do it, showing a bit of, like, Like, if you only ever watch one, he's quite good at seeming like he's telling the truth. If you only see him once, you can watch a documentary or a program with Hulk Hogan in it. He comes across like sincere, like humble, like
Zeke made him humble. So
yeah, when he made him humble, then fucked his ass. If you watch a lot of Hulk Hogan stuff, you're like, oh, he's just forgotten that he said any of that other stuff. And now he's saying something else because it just seems like the thing to say at the moment to make this person like him, Max. I think the Hulk Hogan sort of self-delusion or whatever worked better when it was far more likely that you're just working the person one-on-one.
Like, right,
when he talks about that he was, that he auditioned to be the bass player of Metallica, like, that sounds bizarre, right? But they did audition a lot of guys to be their bass player, certainly after Cliff Burton. I don't know after Cliff Burton died how many they did. After Jason Newsted died, they interviewed him. They auditioned loads of people. I don't imagine that's the incident he was talking about. I think he was talking about replacing Cliff Burton. But like, if that's the only obvious bullshit thing you've ever heard him say, you go, well, he did start out playing bass in bands. And like, you know, when did Cliff Burton die? I don't know. Was it? I mean, I think it's 86. Maybe it was 82. Maybe Hogan wasn't yet, you know, or whatever. You know, maybe. But when you listen to all the Hulk Hogan interviews, and he's telling you that, he's telling you that, like, they were going to give him the George Foreman grill, but he was dropping his kids to school and he missed the phone call, so they moved to the next guy on the list. That's not how that works. You know, he wasn't sure who was going to win against, you know, I didn't know that Andre the Giant was going to cooperate with me when we went into the main event of WrestleMania 3. Well, if you only hear him tell that story, he sounds legit. And, you know, you think, well, Andre, I mean, I guess if he didn't want to cooperate, he wasn't going to, you know, not knowing, of course, that, like, Andre's career as a top guy was basically over because back and his knees and everything were in bits. And he'd clearly worked with Hogan loads before and nothing like that had ever happened. I mean, maybe he beat him up a little, like, in the very early part of his career, in the same way that you would be stiff. That's just kind of how they worked. And you know, it's like, and then you start, and you know a little bit more about Hogan and how finicky and persnickety he was politically all the time. Like, you know, he wouldn't have got into the ring under those circumstances. There's no way. But if he's just talking to you and that, and, you know, it might be true. So I don't know. I think Rick is way more lost than I think Hogan is.
Yeah. But is Hogan just a compulsive liar?
Well, there's probably, yes, he would seem to be.
And also question for the wrestler and wrestling aficionado in the room. Do you think compulsive liars do well in wrestling? Do they over-index in terms of are there more compulsive liars in wrestling than there are as a percentage of the overall population?
The smartest thing I've ever said about wrestling was no one ever got into wrestling because everything was going great.
Although
that's less true now than it's ever been.
It is less true. It is not.
I mean, you no longer have to have fallen in with carnival folk. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can go to a school that has advertised and, like, you know, be
sure. But I think it's not that the wrestling is the thing that has gone badly.
And also, Jack, a lot of people going wrong with you.
Oh, we've talked about do you not remember?
Oh well, like, okay, I don't remember.
Yeah. The whole reason I started wrestling was that I had gone through a breakup that kicked my ass, and I decided I was going to go on a journey of self-improvement and distraction. So I started getting in shape, and I was planning on, like, getting back into music, but then I saw that the wrestling thing had started, was doing that white collar thing, and I was like, that's also a good distraction, and I've been going to the gym for like 3 weeks now. Perfect. And then it just got wildly out of hand from there. But if I didn't get dumped, I would never have started wrestling.
Like, from the outside, it looks like wrestling has been excellent for your prospects on the dating scene.
We got back together. And it was a terrible idea.
Of course you damn did.
turns out, and I swear to God, I didn't know the first round, she was actually quite interesting.
Big bang boom.
Yeah.
And that's the secret. That's the secret, Lister. Every woman is.
Every woman is.
Every single woman.
You put on your best pair of sweatpants and invite them to that weird smelly wrestling show.
They don't like, maybe they don't like wrestling, but they seem to like wrestlers. I don't know. There's a weird dichotomy there.
I don't know. With the way wrestling's going, with the way the industry's changing, I don't think it's too long before the wrestlers will be paying the fans to have couch worn sweatpants and buy them from the fans, you know, as opposed to ring worn attire.
Yeah. But Gaz, to answer your question, I think that the people involved in wrestling are, by my experience, not the kind of people that we would traditionally have met, having gone through fairly simple fucking privileged lives up to this point.
You didn't spend any of your life as an active alcoholic, clearly. So,
and I'm even saying like. There's a game you can play in a room full of wrestlers, which is show of hands who has a dodgy Batman tattoo and whose parents are still together. And the Batman tattoos always win. certain small numbers that stops being right. But like, I'm talking super broad strokes here that like, yes, I think that you get this like super interesting mix of people who came into it in weird ways and are kind of weird people and do compulsive liars over index. I think relative to the average, yes, maybe relative to other places where compulsive liars are maybe more successful, no. I think it's a place where your success is entirely subjective. So being manipulative or being, and the other side of that coin is like very sociable and well-liked. Sorry, being very well-liked is super valuable. If you can't be well-liked, you can get away with being manipulative.
Yeah, I understand. I understand, and I think you're probably really onto something when you're saying that it is an industry. It is a thing that is at least in part, and in fact, a lot. So success is socially mediated, and like you can lie to yourself, and you can lie about how successful you personally are, and you know really. Who'd say you're wrong because maybe you just aren't because the booker didn't like you or whatever. Maybe you are successful because the booker did like you and really you aren't very good. And ultimately, who's to really say any of that? Comedy's very like that. I mean, like when you're talking about the guys who rise to the very top, there is a more and more objective element to it in that, like, can they sell tickets or
draw TV numbers? But you can't just be good.
But you could be a pretty bad comic and steal a living in it. I mean, like, and
the more I look back on the people who kind of stole a living in it are the people who were like just very social and like made friends with the bookers and blah, you know, and even people who weren't like who you wouldn't imagine are social but who are kind of very social. I'm thinking of like Conor O'Toole, who like is a weirdo but a weirdo who gets on with everyone.
He was able to be nice. He was able to at least be non-threatening, as well as nice. I think he was, you know, and like smart, and that you could observe patterns and figure out what you like. Sort, you know, because it wasn't that he's not funny. But the point is more.
I still quote his jokes all the time.
Yeah, I think he was funny, but I think the point is you wouldn't expect. Like when you think of, you don't think of like he's this big gregarious guy who's everybody's friend, because you think of that guy maybe being the life and soul of every party, which he would be the first to tell you he wouldn't be. But like in a way of sort of doing, and with the compulsive liar, there's a bunch of them in comedy for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, in wrestling, you will get as well, maybe not as much now, but like you will get way further along. And being able to explain calling it working. You know what I mean? Like you'll be able to get way further before it's obvious that like, okay, even for a sport where we're all supposed to be pretending who we are. And again, that's less true now than it's ever been as well.
Also, I think one of the beauties of it is that, and I think it's the difference between, I think they're super similar. I think theater, comedy, wrestling, I think they're all super similar. The one thing that you have in wrestling, which is you have training. And you have this really small community who meets up and cross-pollinates super frequently. So it's quite easy for lies to both spread and be invalidated.
That's for sure there.
If the
I don't know how much you've been around any comedy scene, but it's exactly like that. I know there's not training, but like there's the same 20 gigs on in a city.
That's basically training,
and like, you know, you work around with the same people, and yeah, the bullshit and the fucking rumors and the lies, and there's a, and I don't know if I would always consider someone who's like a promoter who's a liar. Almost every comedy promoter is a liar in one sense. But I wouldn't always call them
telling their family that they're doing something else.
Yeah.
I'm a producer.
You know, to where like, you know, I wouldn't consider it compulsive lying to lie if it is to your benefit financially. Like as a promoter.
Yeah, no, a compulsive liar will lie about something that has nothing, no benefit to them or to the person they're telling the lie.
I don't think that's a thing in wrestling.
No, it is. It absolutely is. And like,
not like an outsized thing.
We know in common has done this.
Yeah.
I don't mean like an outsized thing in wrestling.
Oh, you don't? Oh, sorry. I was just talking about you don't think that that's a thing. Generally,
I don't know that it would be
compulsive liars like lie, like the clues in the name, they lie compulsively. They don't lie because it benefits them, they just lie because lying is what they do.
Well, like, and the thing is, they get found out all the time and really easily because they're it's just they can't do anything else. But in either a social, like, maybe in wrestling more than anything, there's a built in. Like thing to where you can be just like, I'm just working the boys, or I'm just working, or I'm just living the gimmick.
That's the gimmick,
you know,
bro.
You know, and so that by the time it's obvious to everyone that this person is like that, they're sort of got their tentacles in around stuff, you know. Whereas like in a less socially mediated, for one, and less socially mediated industry. And an industry in which there wasn't sort of this thing that looks very like compulsive lying that you're kind of expected to do, I think people get found out a lot quicker. So that's all it would take for it to be overrepresented. It doesn't mean it's replete with them, although, you know, it's replete with its problems.
And actually, something that's like definitely obvious to everyone on this call, but I just thought of it myself, is like comedy is very like wrestling in that way, in that like there are lies that you're telling as part of your set. Like, yeah. The first thing a comedy coach will tell you is like, if you have a funny story about a friend, make it about you.
Yeah.
You know, because that's like, you know, that's more relatable, that's whatever, you know, slightly tweak and slightly alter all of the funny things you have, and whatever has happened, it's happened to you. You are this person who is a magnet for funny stories. So like, yeah, like comedy, you're forced to lie from the get-go. Wrestling, you're forced to lie as part of it. So obviously, yeah, both of them.
You're lying in comedy, first of all, yeah, as part of your act. And like, everyone's sort of, or at least it is knowable that those are fibs. I mean, I know if you ever talk to an audience, they really do certainly act like it's, and again, it's more fun if you believe it's true. Like they certainly, oh, he has this incredible story. And like, you'll see, it'll be more like when they're doing that, like,
your dad who thought Chris Rock was performing live when you saw him on the TV?
Oh, he thought he was just riffing.
No, he didn't think he was performing live, but he thought that all stand-up comics, he thought that the art was that you just got up there and just worked the crowd. He thought that you just went up and just, and like, so he thought that these guys were wizards. Like, he couldn't fathom how good they must be at it. And then it was the Chris Rock one that broke kayfabe, because he spliced in. It was the first one I think he'd ever seen where they splice in obviously different shows to make the one show. And if you're appreciating the art, it's really impressive because you're seeing one show made out of a lot of shows. And it's really cool. But he was like, oh, well, I mean, I'm not as impressed if they're just fucking writing it all and it's the same show every
time. I remember I was at that. I went to see that tour in London. I went with my dad, and I remember getting the program, and it had the set list in it. It was fascinating. It had the track list for the album. of the show you were about to see. And I was like, that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a couple of curveballs in there, a couple of, like, jokes in the set list that weren't in the show, but I was
you want to do that for surprise and delight for the audience, but then that's kind of accepted by everyone who even sort of knows what they're doing, that you do that. I mean, it's like, of course you bullshit, of course all of these things didn't happen to you, and there's no way you'd still be knocking around the way you are. But then
after Michael McIntyre became famous, was he really experiencing that in Waitrose?
Yeah,
was he really?
Yeah, I mean, Michael McIntyre is incredibly recognizable. Like, you know, nothing that's happening to him is happening to a normal person. It's like, at best, the person you're involved with knows who you are, and it's like fucking playing along.
Yeah.
But then there's the other type of lying. It's like, I need to get stage time. I have fuck all stage time. I'm going to tell this booker that I've loads. He's sort of going to know that I'm lying, because if I really did, then, you know, I wouldn't need to go persuading him. You know,
it's like somebody puts a bullshit thing on their CV to fill some time.
It's all a work, brother. I don't know, conceptual or
under indexing lies.
It's not glamorizing. It's growing.
Everyone fucking lies. If you're not lying on your CV, you're not doing it right.
You're not. Honestly, you're not trying hard enough, and you deserve the job.
It's more associated with acting, but it's 100% true in anything where you're basically trying to make the whole lovey culture, where you tell everyone that they're wonderful, and like as it goes on and as it grows, you have to like be more exaggerated with it, because everybody knows that everybody exaggerates. So in order to really display that you really liked what the person is doing, you have to go fucking nuts. Like, then that's where the fucking air kissing and the 50 different ways of, you know, that all comes into it. And when someone from the outside hasn't observed it happen that way, you're like, what the fuck are these people doing? This is a pub that everyone has to enjoy. Why are you flouncing everywhere? You know? And you're lying about sort of who you are to like everyone. It's not just while you're on stage. Because the worst thing you can do in Ireland is try. I don't know, but I think America's a bit different. They kind of admire like the kind of grinding element of it, but you have to sort of pretend in Ireland that you sort of just like to your friends or whatever, that you just, hey, whatever.
Yeah, I'm just trucking along, just like doing my best. But lucky I got this, that.
This came to me on the toilet. Can you believe it? Whereas you know, if they find out, it's like, okay, I often get complimented / told to stop for being good at impersonations. Now, I'm not great at them, but like, layperson on just talking to me will go, you're really good at voices, they're really funny. And like, if I tell them the truth, which is, yeah, I sit at home and practice them.
Now, man,
then you're
a
weirdo.
That is different, I will say.
But the point is, I have to lie. I go, it's just fucking natural.
But it's not like,
you know?
No, Gav, it's not different. It's not like someone picks up a guitar at a party and it just kind of works. And then everyone's like, wow, you're really good at that. And you're like, I guess I am.
However, I feel you can say that you practice the guitar.
Yes. Yes, of course you can.
You cannot say that you practice.
You might want to
underplay. Like, I know that it doesn't come like, you know, completely out of nowhere. But unfortunately, the thing is, you cannot tell anyone that you practice them.
I know.
It's so unfortunate.
But surely you must know that, like, okay, take me and have it not be me, to where I just sort of better at it than your average person. And take like Mario Rosenstock or whoever. You might not like him. I actually think he's quite good at impressions for some people at least. And it's like, do you not think he practices? But like, it's like, yeah, you can say you practice guitar. Now, what you might do is go, well, I'm self-taught, or you might underplay how much, you know, you practice, but like, no one's going to believe that you can just pick up the guitar. But if you were to say, I go home and I practice that impression for hours.
You're right, it's because impressions are easy. Guitar is hard.
Yeah. But they aren't easy at all.
If they were easy, everyone would do
them. Everyone thinks that you can either do them or you can't.
Well, it's because people think like it's probably closer to singing than it is to guitar.
It is closer to singing, but people won't admit to practicing singing either. But like,
okay, but I do
believe you have to if you want to be
there are people who cannot learn to sing.
Yes, there are people who cannot learn to do impressions too, and they're very intrinsically linked.
But I think there, I don't think there's anyone who you can't teach to play the guitar.
To an extent, you can get them to play it like a little bit.
I think there's a ratio of skill to talent.
But the point is, Jack, like, at what point is the difference between when you are singing and when you are speaking in rhythm, for example?
Like, that's called rapping.
Like, can the guy from B-52s sing? And if not, what's he doing? I mean, it's singing.
He's a vocalist.
I mean, but where are you drawing the line? Whereas, like, unable to play the guitar, it's like, you know, it's not an open tuning. So if I just strum it, nothing happens, and I don't know anything else.
That's why you got to put it in an open tuning, bro. Yeah. I only need three fingers to play the guitar, two to hold the pick, one to make the chord.
So my point is that like you can teach, but there are a bunch of people you couldn't teach to play the guitar in a way that anyone would ever willingly sit there and listen to them, even though you would have to concede that they were playing the guitar if you asked about it. Similarly, even if you're singing terribly, you are singing. There is no rule about what it is or what it isn't. But you would say that person can't sing and they cannot be taught.
Yes. Agreed.
But singing is way closer to doing impressions, where you can't be like, yes, you don't want to be like, yes, I practiced that a lot. You sort of want it to be like, I just had this talent and I worked in the shop and then I went on X Factor and then boom, you know, as opposed to I grinded the shit out of this for ages. But the impression thing I only brought up because, like, that's a definitive thing that I can tell you I practiced. But, like, I also practice essentially writing jokes all the time. We are practicing being funny now, and we have been doing so forever, right?
And we're still not any better at it.
But the thing is, we're way better at it. We're just not good. But we're way better than we would be if we hadn't.
My rate of increase.
Go back to episode one. It's just us talking about taxes and
Hitler.
But keep
my
in mind
rate of increase in quality is actually greater than yours. I'm still just fathoms below.
But even at episode one, it's like
I'm like a developing nation of comedy. And sure, I've got 20% GDP growth every year.
Yeah.
What does it really mean?
So even if at episode one people were like, you guys are really funny for people who've never done it before, you'd go, yeah, I guess. But as opposed to, yeah, we've known each other for ages. This is basically all we ever do.
Do you ever, like, it's weird. Do you ever hang around people who don't be funny? They exist.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
Whoa!
There it is.
Oh, God. Hello? Hello? Burn unit?
Yeah. It's Jack again.
Sorry, no, this is G unit. I always make that mistake.
Yes. And it's not a slight against them. What you will often find is they're good at stuff that's important.
I recently in my professional career have come across someone who is, I would describe them as more serious. And you know, like, serious is not my modus operandi. Like, you know, I am, you know, levity incarnate in every situation. There is nothing that I take seriously on the surface. And it's just, yeah, I'm just like, man, how do you work?
What's going on there? What's your steez?
I mean, the main thing is I don't know your steez.
What do you think is good?
Yeah. When you sit down, you're like, just what's going on up there, you know?
And I would think, had they the sense they were born with or the verbal skills they should have acquired, they would be able to look at you and go, what's your fucking steez?
What are you doing?
Oh, God. Steez misalignment across the board is a
big steez misalignment.
Big steez misalignment. Yeah. That's tough.
The question I have is,
what do you do when you're alone with your partner and there's, like, you know, nothing going on? Are you, like, making a funny voice, doing some sort of dance that's not very good?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on, you know? And they're probably like, are you discussing politics? What's the economy like, you know? And I'm like, man.
Let me add another layer to that for you. Think about people who are neither funny nor bright.
Well, I would argue that that must suck. To be
Be the best thing ever. Well, anything in its class.
Well, professional wrestlers aside, people who are neither funny nor bright.
That is who I
think. You're right. That may be certainly better than this category of people, which are the misaligned people. The people that life has for some reason told them it is valuable to be one way, but they're the other. Now, we can readily imagine how miserable it would be to be as I think we all are, because I can't remember a time I was ever any other way. I just got maybe slightly better at expressing it. We know how miserable it would be to be put into a situation where you couldn't be that way, where you had to be Johnny Serious all the time, because it would be effort at all times.
Yeah.
Like the default would be effort. Whereas for the serious person, it's like their default is to be serious and anything else is effort. But what I think would potentially be the most miserable of all would be someone who's decided they're so that they're the funny one. They're the funny guy. They're the Whackmeister General, and they just aren't. And that's, you know, and like, really, they'd be much happier just to be able to be like, sit there and fucking talk about whatever serious people talk about. And that's where you get like the David Brent factor or like whatever it would be. Like,
And I suppose, is that a kind of talent misalignment
as well? I don't know.
Or is it
the big fish, small pond?
Outlook misalignment.
Yeah.
I don't know. I once had occasion to read something, and I can't remember what it was, but they talked about the thing toward being happy is to be integrated. Like, integrated with who you, to where the things you want and the things you do and say sort of match, you know? As opposed to people like you more when you're that way, because it's kind of obvious from the outside that even if you think like the typical nice guy who's like not really a nice guy, you know,
but
like his whole thing is about like being nice, but like it's usually pretty darn obvious to the rest of the world that's not who he is, and we don't really know what he is, but we know he's not that. We don't why it's off-putting, but it is. So we like him less. So he actually, because he thinks the important thing to do is to be nice, he ramps up the niceness even more and it's a negative, either positive or negative feedback loop, whichever one would make that statement true. Mm. And it turns into that, and then he becomes miserable and weird, and that's where you get incels from, you know?
Mm. It didn't take us that long, guys, but we brought it back to incels.
We did bring it back to
incels. Yeah. We're always going to get there. I mean, if we talk long enough, it's going to be incels.
It's going to be
incels. It is. Well, like, I would consider the person who has decided that they're the office funny guy or the friend group funny guy, but who just isn't.
Yeah.
It's so the I guess same in thing. In summary, Ric Flair, I think, was the answer?
Yeah, I think it's Ric Flair.
It's Ric Flair. Yeah. Or the Iron Sheik. Whatever,
or the Iron Sheik, that is it.
So what I'm saying is we're not miserable, even though many people would look at our lives and say we should be, and it's largely because we're basically integrated. We're basically doing and saying
aligned.
We're basically doing and saying what we want to do and say.
Yeah. Do you feel, that's you feel true, integrated at all times?
Did you say do I feel integrated at all times?
As no. in like, you know, like I feel like you're integrated in the way that we're describing it now.
Yeah.
Now. You know, but like when you're in work, I have a feeling, Manus, when you're in work, you are entirely yourself with some slight variations.
I'm frankly, for my career, too much myself.
I think you're yourself. I think you're filtered, but not different.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah, I'm not coming out and being filthy. But like I very rarely, and again, I would probably get along easier if I would dial it back even further. But then who knows? Because maybe people would like it. That would be really obvious. But I rarely sit there or speak at a meeting in a way that like makes me feel that way, where it's like, ah, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I tend to think that, the thing to do, and I would probably ask the same questions of you guys. You'd have to ask someone who worked with me if that was true, because I don't fucking know. I think I'm just being myself and being that way, but maybe not. Mm. Or maybe I am completely and shouldn't be.
Yeah. Jack, I think you like, certainly for me, I think you hit the nail on the head, which is filtered but not different, I think would be how I feel about it. Is that I think my personality doesn't change that much. I just don't say a lot of the stupid things that I say here, or I say, you know, yeah,
there's a bit of quality control going on. You're not willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
We're realizing that less. Realizing that less.
The quality control, to be fair, some of the quality control does hurt my soul, because there are some excellent gags left on the table.
Give me an example.
I don't have an example of that.
There
are moments to moment. Well, what has helped me get through that is very much realizing that there's actually a whole lot more jokes that are back on the table, like the really simple, stupid ones that, like, like you'd be like, if I was talking to you guys, I'm not gonna fucking do that one, because, like, they've heard that a million times, or it's like, but it's like, you know, what, you hear about that girl who can't draw? You know, they call her Tracy. Fucking murders.
So wait, Matt, you're telling me liquor, I hardly know her, yeah, is back on the table.
It's completely back on the table.
Money.
And like, when you're still doing it as a bit, you're kind of formulating in your head and going, okay, who's around? And you're looking around, you're trying to look suitably ashamed and like trying to convey the same feeling of dirt that you would feel making a joke to one of us, but like it's really mild dirt, but you have to, like, in order to make it okay for everyone to laugh, you have to be like
you have to do the comedy lean. You're like, you know, hey, you have, like, have you heard about the airplane food?
I hardly know her.
Neil Fitzpatrick explained, just to bring it back to impressions, Neil Fitzpatrick remembers very vividly, no, because we spent so many years of our lives around like performy types, people who can just do that, who they have that just innate thing. Musical people, impression people, comedy people. And he remembers busting out a Stewie Griffin, like real something that's real basic, like, ew, I get a bit of Lewis. You know, something like real, real basic. And like the room went quiet and they looked at him like he just done a fucking magic trick. And they were like, what? And he was in part of his, you know, he was in one of the many European places he was with Mars. He was like, how did you do that? People who clearly
I bet
just
didn't say that he practiced.
No, because
did practice. He mightn't have registered that he was practicing, but at some point he started doing that reasonably regularly. Even if it was just talking to us, he'd be like,
reps and practice are the same thing. Yeah.
So like,
I remember I did that a little while ago where I do a lot of the Family Guy ones all right, because I basically sound like Seth MacFarlane. But the one I couldn't do was a non-Seth MacFarlane voice, which is Patrick Warburton. And I was like, I found myself watching Family Guy like a week later, and I was like, Peter. You know, practicing. And then I was like, oh, you just got to get louder.
There's usually a way. Like, there are some people with bizarre voices that it can be like hard to do. We've talked about this before. Homer's super.
No one can do a Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
It's also never worth it. Because, like, you know, like, what value is a Homer impression? No one's ever going to need you to do that. They're never going to get you to need to do SpongeBob either, but SpongeBob is fun.
Yeah, because you get to do the dolphin laugh. I've gotten a lot of value out of my Kermit.
Your Kermit is very good.
See, the thing about the Kermit is...
And you practiced it!
Practice it all the time.
And if you're talking to people, you can't say that.
Because the beautiful thing about the Kermit is that one of the best ways to practice the Kermit is to explain how to do it, because it's not about the words you say, it's about the funny little noises you make after. Great.
Speaking of Kermit / Jordan Peterson, Joyce was laid out sick.
Oh, yeah, brother!
Grow up. Joyce was laid out.
There's
sick.
Only one simple rule you've got to learn in this bedroom, Joyce.
Oh, come on, guys. You need
it's
to.
Clean,
you...
it's mean, and it's ready to get lean.
And it's not easy being green.
Anyway, Joyce was sick for 7 days. So she was in bed and she was just kind of being on YouTube, just doing her usual ass thing. And who the fuck, after 7 days of YouTube, should be all up in her algorithm, yeah, despite never watching him? Jordan fucking Peterson.
Brilliant.
He's an SEO wizard.
Lock yourself in your room for 7 or 8 days and YouTube will figure out that you need Jordan Peterson in your life. Yeah. Now, YouTube doesn't fully know that COVID is making normal people do that right now, right?
Exactly. It just needs to catch up with the times.
And the thing is, actually, like, from what
the algorithm's not wrong, the situation is wrong.
Like, the value in Jordan Peterson is, for the most part, in the actual very basic life improvement tips that he gives absolute shut-ins, right? So it's like, they might be able to glean something from it, where it's like, have you clean your room? Now, it doesn't have to be perfect, but have you considered, you see the pile of takeaway wrappers, could you take one poor part of that and bring it downstairs? You know, that sort of self-improvement. And someone, for the most part, who's just, the number of YouTube video views has gone up to a certain point. YouTube is probably like, hey, you know, they just listen to a little bit of this. This might actually help their life a little bit.
They do need to clean their room.
To clean that room, you know, because it sounds like a stupid proposition to, like, you or I, maybe you more than I. I mean, my room's pretty filthy, but, like, you know. Although I suppose the person who really needs to hear it won't hear it. And where it's like, I know it's not going to be perfect, but could you make it a little less imperfect? I'm just saying, just take, you see the way there's actively ketchup on the floor and there's a pile of comb tissues beside it. How about you move those over and, like, wipe them over the ketchup, and then on your way downstairs to get another Sunny D out of the fridge, just put them in the bin.
Manus,
not the one.
Do you have permission to read from Jordan Peterson's
book? I'm doing the audiobook.
Oddly specific advice.
I'm actually breaking it down even more. I'm breaking it down into one rule for life, and it is, while you're picking up your cum-filled tissues, why not use their latent absorbent capacity to clean up some of the sauce or pudding that you have inevitably also spilled on your better form?
And it just that's feels the so seen.
It's still like 700 pages long, but this is for the real hard cases.
Yeah,
the 12 rules were way too much for them. Clean your room was hard. They need to be like, well, I can still throw the cum tissues on the floor, right? Yes, no one is asking you to stop doing that. I'm just saying, once a week, with a critical mass of absorbent and yet also soiled tissues is there on your floor, is to just wipe them across one of the other stains and bring the tissues to the bin. And if you can take that out of this 700-page manual, you will have improved your life a little bit. And you might be ready for rule one, sub-rule two, which is not tasting the sauce off of the tissues on the way.
Classic addendum.
Yeah, Manus, is it every 20th page of this 700-page book, just, you can come in this one, just to, like, give them a bit of incentive to keep going?
It starts where it's like every like fifth page, and by the end of the book, the amount of cum pages has gradually, like, it's not gone up by much, like, it's still 7 pages. But,
it's an improvement.
That's a 40% bump.
Yeah.
And it's and often there'll be like a suggestion, like, instead of Googling dangerous pornography in order to inspire you, why not think of something erotic? You know, not that.
Wow.
Not that.
Yeah. Not that. That one's okay.
That one's all right.
There you go. I think you found it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that
former teacher has since passed away. So anything you think about doing with them is perfectly legal. Because you have to understand, these guys have seen a limited number of women in their lives. If you or I had to rely on the old noggin, like, we'd have some material, like.
Yeah.
The Chapter One program guys, they got nothing. And consequently, they're the easiest to help, because even the smallest improvement will make the most difference.
That's a real Christmas miracle.
Isn't it, though? So anyway, it'll be up on Audible next week. If you've never used the free trial, you can get One Rule for Life by Jordan Peterson as read by Manus Cronin with your credit. I just ask to leave a 5-star review, regardless of whether that indicates an accurate description of your actual feelings of the book. It helps me a lot with my algorithm, and I think you probably want to do that.
You probably owe me that.
definitely. They've listened to like 500 hours.
We've really helped. And we've helped you.
Yeah.
We've helped you.
This one, a lot of deep dives into the psychology of niche hobbies. Maybe less jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say less jokes, but maybe better jokes.
Oh yeah,
that's for the audience to decide after we tell them. So yes.
Yeah. No, I can decide after that they were the ones who were wrong. It's why there's a lot of there's not a lot of delusional people in distance running, for example.
That's just how fast you went.
I would have done that marathon in 2 hours if only I hadn't had a booker wouldn't book me to do it. I could be the world champion Olympic sprinter if only I just had the right friends. Doesn't exist. It's you and the track, baby, and the needle.
Yeah, and the needle. But that's the difference between sports and theater.
Yeah. Steroids won't help.
And everybody needs to know which side of that divide they lie on.
Yeah.
Comedy, theater, 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 wrestling, theater.
You might surprise yourself what side of the line you do fall on, but as we've described, nothing else. It is that you will be much happier for figuring out your role and becoming more integrated and wiping up some of that cum.
Not all of it.
Cum's already gone. It's the sauce.
You're right. Sorry. I haven't read my own book, obviously.
Oh, no. There's a whole other chapter about people who come into nothing and just free cum.
No, the free comers.
Yeah.
That's two rules.
Chapter 9, for target practice.
Smell like patchouli and calm. Fucking weirdos.
In any case. Think of our respective beers. You're feeling topped up on vitamin H, Jay?
Yeah. I really planned on switching over to wine. Didn't. Had two vitamin H's instead. Yeah, it is what it is. Gonna switch to wine.
It is what it is. Malice, yeah, I think I'll see your two beers.
People later. Switch to wine.
Yeah. Eagle Gold Brown is so average. Which, like, to be honest with you, it's kind of fine for a beer of its type. But the fizzy Guinness I had before was much nicer.
Eagle Gold Brown, is that a full, like, because Eagle are known for their Radlers.
They do. They are known for their Radlers. They also have Stiegel Fry beer, which is their alcohol-free version, which is pretty nice. They recently launched or recently launched in Ireland. They have a Helles. It's in a white can. I haven't had it yet. I probably will at some point because it seems to be kind of everywhere. I keep seeing it. So yeah, I don't know. You might as well just buy whatever is cheap in your shop. I mean, this is but it's fine. It's not gross or anything. I still can't fully smell everything, so therefore I still can't fully taste. And there were two pairs of underpants on my bed the other day, one that I'd just taken out to pack in my suitcase and the other that I'd worn for 2 days. And miracle of miracles, the one time ever you wear a pair of underpants for 2 days and there's no visible poo or comb on any part of it. And they both look really similar.
You had a dry day?
Completely, two dry days. I mean, normally you'd be able to tell by the body odor, but I cannot currently smell body odor. So I just had to put them both in the laundry basket. They're still there because I haven't washed them. But, you know, they do both now, you know, they're both soiled by each other, nothing else. So I'm saying is, kids, don't get COVID if you need to know if your underwear smells. This has been an elaborate vaccine ad.
Going to be some very important information.
It has been an elaborate ad for the vaccines, but here it is.
My two beers. The other half and burial, despite the inauspicious start and the imperial pale ale bullshit, was actually really nice, really juicy, really tasty, fruity. lovely and really got me on the road to enjoying the Whiplash Scaldy Porter, which is a robust porter, 5.5%. Really, yeah, quite delicious. I think I'd give the first one, I'd give them both a 9. Like, I'm enjoying both of these beers. And, you know, maybe that's influenced by this is my last day of work. Bitches! But,
Yurt.
Yurt. But yeah, two good beers by three good brewers.
And two bad neighbors. I don't understand. Are you he's saying you and Barbara are bad neighbors? No! That man and that boy of his. Which really only leaves us one thing to cheers to. And that is to staying...
Jack's fantastic Kermit impression?
Jack's excellent Kermit impression.
Oh, thanks, guys. That is Christmas themed, because I learned it from a Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Did you learn it for a Muppet's Christmas Carol?
Nope.
Yeah, I feel like if you were to say to people you practice an impression for a play, I think they might tolerate it more. But if you're just like, I just did it so I'd be better at it, I could like bust it out like in random situations.
I learned it for this context, but I didn't figure out how to explain it after.
Yeah. Especially when the impression is like a colleague. Yeah, I learned an impression of Geraldine just so I can do it.
Oh, yeah. I a lot of colleague impressions. I've also got like a backlog of ones from old colleagues that I just can't use in my current job. They're useless. But they're there. They're all there.
And cut!
Good enough. Splice in some reaction shots of me and shove it on the air.